Okay, so yesterday we started trying to understand how Chazal get from a pasuk which seems to talk about Hazinu to a mitzvah for every individual to write, however you want to understand that mitzvah, a Sefer Torah. We noted that the Rambam's argument is that yes, the word Shira means Hazinu in context, but because of the prohibition, which again, we wanted to spend even more time, I could establish there is such a prohibition. Let's just take it as a given there is such a prohibition under normal circumstances to write a parsha by itself. Therefore, if you have to write Hazinu, must be you have to write the whole Torah, which as we saw in the Acharim, probably the clearest of this is the Torah Tmima. The problem with that is that that only works, right? You're assuming your conclusion, right? If there is a mitzvah to write one parsha, then it is mutter to write one parsha, just like it is by tefillin, just like it is by mezuzah. Therefore, it is a bit hard to defend the Rambam. I have no defense, okay? Yosef thought I was lying, like I have some magic answer, like I'm just holding out from you. I have no defense. I don't know the answer for the Rambam, and that's why I look for other answers. But Daniel thinks he has an answer for the Rambam, so it is a mitzvah to attempt to defend the Rambam. So, what do you think? Let's try it for sheer, and we'll see whether people agree with that. I am open to something that will explain the Rambam. I just don't have one that I like, anyways.
Well, the Rambam says that the reason for it is that you can just separate and write a specific amount of the Torah.
Right.
You have to write the whole thing. Obviously, we know that's not true because you write the tefillin and the mezuzah. So the only way to make the Rambam work, where in this case you have to write the whole Sefer Torah, but in the other case you don't, is to show a difference between the tefillin and the mezuzah and the shira, and explain why they're different. And I think, as far as I know, the only way that they would be different is that both tefillin and mezuzah, after you write them, they have another use, which is, you put it on the doorpost, or you wear tefillin every single day, versus over here, when you write down the shira, that's it.
Right, look, the direction you're taking, I think, is good, right, which is to say, look, maybe it's not that the Rambam, right, meaning there must be a missing stage in the Rambam. It's not simply the Rambam said, well, you aren't allowed to write a single parsha by themselves. Of course you can, right? But he just doesn't believe that this could be one of those, because by tefillin and mezuzah, we know what we would do with those parshiot. Here, the mitzvah is just to write it, right? And it would be, in such a context, it would be strange for there just to be a mitzvah to write Hazinu and just have it sit by itself.
Have no purpose.
Now again, that sort of moves back in the direction of the other Acharonim, that the real issue is not parshiot, is that Hazinu is a testimony about the rest of the Torah, and therefore it doesn't really make sense. But that is a different reason than what the Rambam gives. You can try to bridge it. It could be. Right? I can't prove that it is. I can't prove that it isn't. I don't know. I don't have a great answer for the Rambam. We saw yesterday two other attempts, right, in the Ketava Kabbalah. One is, as I said, is the pure logical argument, which is Hazinu is meant to warn people to keep the Torah, and therefore, if you have to write the warning, then obviously you have to write the content that the warning is coming to warn you about. Right? That was his logical argument. His secondary argument was the literary one, the linguistic one, which is that Shira often does really mean the Torah, and maybe that's why Chazal think that's at least the meaning or a legitimate meaning, right? Multiple levels of meaning, as the case may be.
Here in the Torah, they do say also to write the Torah. Well, Mishnah Torah, it says.
Yeah, and what does Mishnah Torah refer to?
That's what I was going to say.
Not the Torah, for sure not, right? Probably not. Right? But Chazal understand Mishnah Torah just means Dvarim, right? So at best it'd be Dvarim, right? That's by the way, going to be the problem with what Daniel said, is that will at best get us to how Chazal knew that it wasn't just Hazinu. Right, but as the Torah Tmima said, his second prong of his argument is okay. Maybe it's not the whole parsha, but it's definitely mutter write a whole chumash. So at best, you get to Mishnah Torah, you get to Dvarim, right? To go to the whole Torah, that's not even going to help you, right? Right, because you're right. Once you write the whole Sefer, right? At best, that's how far it would get you. To get to the whole Torah, you need something else.
Four books, then
does it? Does it really?
You said Eretz Tanakhshir, that's what Devarim encompasses.
No, I said that's what the word Mishnah Torah is supposed to mean, but what that actually means is very hard, because how many mitzvot appear in Devarim that never appear in the rest of the Torah? How many mitzvot appear in the rest of the Torah that don't appear in Devarim? And how many mitzvot that appear in Devarim that appear elsewhere appear differently in Devarim? Same with narrative, right? The answer to all those questions is a lot. Right? I don't have numbers for you, but a lot in each of those. Okay. Right, and we won't go back to the Shlal David, right? The Shlal David really goes through and justifies why it really might just be, right, in Pshat, just the Shira. But that's where we were yesterday. It was the Ketava Kabbalah's attempt. And then we did the Torah Tumima yesterday also, right? Yeah, I think so. No, I think we were up to the Torah Tumima's answer, is that right? Right, yesterday we'd seen the Torah Tumima's question, right, challenging the Rambam, right, Sor Zion, right, where he didn't understand the Rambam, and he suggested it. So I don't think we read that yesterday. He says, "Umashin yirel omar bazel piyam avor begitin daf samach amar aleph ulfmeni besamach pasuk kolze da Torah migila migila nitna klomark shenemra parsha lemoshe yakodva vaud parsha yakodva ashevasov arvem shanak varayam uchanim kol parshiot." So the Torah Tumima suggests something which may be his interpretation of the Rambam, which is as follows: there is a machloket in the Gemara whether the Torah was given in one shot or given unit by unit. This is machlok in the Gemara, right? Parsha, parsha nitna, or stuma nitna. Okay? So he says, let's assume it was given parsha by parsha. So how would Moshe give the Torah? That means he gave, let's say, up until Yitro in one block at Matan Torah. And after that, you know, as things happened, he wrote it down, and that became integrated into the Torah. So the Torah Tumima says, okay, fine. That works until when?
Till
the end.
Till they finish the
right?
In the desert.
Right? Until the end. Why? Because at the end, right, meaning until then, it's incomplete. But what is the last time Hashem gives Torah to Moshe and says, write down this Shira, what does it probably apply to? This is the Torah Mima's argument. It might be what he thinks the Rama means. Do you do the Torah Mima inside? You tried it? So he says, so look, two lines on the bottom, he says, Kitvu od klomar, hashlimu et shirat hazinu. He said, maybe the way to read it is as follows, right? So far we have the Rambam, which I don't fully understand. We have the two arguments of the Ketava Kabbalah. Either, right, again, the Rabag, Marsha, which is just logical, right? If hazinu tells you to keep the rest of the Torah, then obviously you have to write the whole Torah. Or the linguistic argument that shira sometimes means the whole Torah. The fourth possibility of Marsha is maybe that Shira means Ha'azinu, but when it says write this Shira, it doesn't mean write this alone. What does it mean?
I'm saying,
hear about that. He said, you have to read it as follows. Write the Shira with which you will complete the Torah, and then teach it, and we switch mid-sentence the direct object. Right? Write the song, and with that song you will have completed the Torah, and then teach it, but it is no longer the song, it is the Torah to the Jewish people. Again, this read...
It sounds like
Rambam. I mean, maybe, not really.
What makes that more valid than the other one?
What more valid? Did I say I was supporting this? I'm trying to understand it, yeah. Right?
I mean,
Okay, I'm going to put this again. None of these sources that we're putting here am I per se putting my name behind. I'm giving you suggestions, and I want you to attack them. I'm not sure I find the Torah Tumima compelling either.
Right.
Right? Meaning there's a lot of interpolation into it.
Right.
The answer to that, by the way, is not, oh, the Rambam is therefore right.
No,
right?
I'm
the answer,
not advocating Rambam in this case. I just want to know what makes them different, because right now they seem they're similar.
They are very different. The Rambam makes a halachic argument. Hazinu means only Hazinu, and then because you can't write Hazinu by itself, you have to write the whole Torah. The Torah Tumima says maybe when it says write Hazinu, it means write Hazinu as the end of the Torah, and now you will have the whole Torah to write. For him, the weakness is that he has to interpolate words, right? Which is Vata Kitvu Lachem et Shira Hazot Vilamda no longer means the song; it means write the song Hazinu, and once you have Hazinu, the Torah is finished. Vilamda, so you can teach it, but it being the Torah.
The Torah,
yeah.
Where's every other parsha after Hazinu?
No, Hazinu is the end.
He's saying write Hazinu.
No, Hazinu really is the end of the Torah, right?
Is
an epilogue. essentially.
But it's still part of...
Correct, but fundamentally... Right, okay, that doesn't bother me so much, because you could say, okay, Hazinu is the last substantive part of the Torah, after that's an epilogue, right? Meaning it's Moshe's final bracha, right? So, well, fine, right? And, like, once you know you have to write 99% of the Torah, so, like, Memela, we know that the last parsha, which, with all its problems, is, like, tagged on. Right? That's not, like, that's a, that kasha, I wouldn't die from that kasha. Right? I would say, okay, he means write 99% of the Torah, and, like, logically, that means finish it up also, whatever happens after this. Again, it's not great. My problem is not that. It's not, what do you do with Zosa Bracha? My problem is the number of words you had to interpolate into the pasuk to make that make sense. Okay, the Netziv has yet another attempt, and anyone understand the Netziv? Just know I'm not sure I understand the Netziv, so this is not like this is a legitimate question. Did anyone understand what the Netziv said? Okay, good. Let's try it together.
The last line is kind
of... So let's try it, okay. So here's his argument. He says, V'yesh la'avino chachara gemara misefei dekra dekayal kol ha'torah. You have to go to the end of the pasuk. What's the end of the pasuk? Guys, what's the end of the pasuk? What's the Netziv saying?
What?
Well, the end is v'ra en v'lamdav in Israel, and then it'll be an eight, etc. Okay. V'li nira mishum da'ha de'mayri hani kroi b'nevua d'meshvot ha'shoftim. Okay. Because this prophecy... Now, what prophecy is he talking about? Hazinu. Good, thank you. Well, really, Vayelech Hazinu, right? What are the prophecies of Vayelech Hazinu? What happens at the end of the Torah? Please, guys, Chumash. What is the end? No. Well, you guys should know it, right? What is the end of the Torah consist of? Not the last day took him. Vayelech Hazinu b'zuz abracha. What is it? What is Vayelech Hazinu? What is the content of those parshiyot? They're coming up. They're not long.
Go and conquer the land?
Nope. It's God telling Moshe, it's God depriving Moshe of a happy death. Right? It's, Moshe, you're about to die, and just know that as soon as you die, what will happen? They are all going to worship Avodah Zarah, and it's all over, and they're all going to, I'm going to kick them out of the land. Before they even get in there, I'm telling you about Gullus. It's a great time, right? It's good job, Moshe. You led them for 40 years, gave them to the Torah, and... Yeah, it's going to be terrible. It's going to be terrible. It's a very, very comforting end of life. Correct, but that's not what God says. I mean, God, you have a chumash? What does God say to him? Right? And by the way, very quick, I said this last year in Parsha. What then is Hazinu? Why would God do this? Why would God torment Moshe in his last moments? It doesn't sound like a nice thing to do. Why would he do this to Moshe? Why would you do this to Moshe? Guys. Oh, that's just mean. Come on. Why would he do that to Moshe? Daniel, why would he do it? Why would God tell Moshe before, right before he dies, that things are going to go very quickly to Gehenna?
To show how much he was...
Then you should tell them. Then you should tell them before. Maybe they still tikva. They still.
Thank you. Right? He tells him because it's not inevitable. The best reason you would do it is this is not a prediction. This is likely, Moshe. But you get one last chance at preventing this. What is that last chance called? Hazinu, thank you. That last chance is called Hazinu. It's Moshe's final musar, which is, please, guys, don't do this. Right? Don't go down that path.
You can also look at it that it was basically Hashem's way of saying, well, there will never be someone like you, Moshe, again.
Sure, but when you see Hazinu, right, so give me the chumash for a second. Right? Except the simple shot is exactly what you said before, Max, which is that when God says it to him, he says, listen. He says, "Vayomer Adonai Moshe, in karbu yamechal amud, krat Yoshua v'yadvu ba'al moed, ba'tzavenu v'yach Moshe v'yishu ba'al moed." Right, you're dying, and then he tells him, "Just know, Vayomer Adonai Moshe, in eshochim amotech, v'kama amazev, zanachar elheg necharar, tashuv v'sham v'bikrubo, ba'zavani v'efer priti asher karatimo." They're going to worship idols. They're going to nullify the Brit, etc., etc. And therefore, what's the solution? So he says,
don't.
Yeah. So what does he say? Ve'ata. Now that you know they are going to rebel, What do I instruct you to do? The pasuk we've been reading the whole time. Vata kitvu lachem et hashira hazot vilamda bnei Israel sima b'feyem liman tieli hashira hazot leid bnei Israel. Give them this song so that it will testify for them. Mm-hmm. Right? So that it won't happen, and if it does happen, it will be predicted so that they will know that God is being just. Right, which will prevent it from spiraling even more out of control, because they'll say, what's God doing to us? Right, they'll have a answer, which is, Hazinu tells us that this is what's going to happen. Okay, that's just the end of the Torah, guys. This is just pshat. All you guys should know Chumash, right? My normal plug for the Word of God, you know, every so often. Not that he needs my haskama, but, you know, reminder.
It's like Yonan in Ved, that he said, the Arbein Yom in Ved Nefechat, and Yonah gave them Tochacha and everything, and then they... And then the tshuva and the Shem saved them.
So they
still have hope. So
correct. I think that's what it is. Right. So he says okay. But he said, what is God predicting? So here the Netziv tries to be very, very careful, and he says as follows: in different stages in history, the Jews sinned for different reasons. Okay. Sometimes they sinned because they were wealthy. Okay? Where does that pasuk come from? How does the Netziv know that the Jews will sin because they're wealthy? Thank you. Vayishman Yishurun Vayivat, which is the middle of Hazinu. That the Jews will be fat and rich and will therefore kick against God and rebel. Right? Some of rebellions in Jewish history, because things were too good. And when things are too good, people turn towards gluttony, think that they did them all themselves, they turn away from God. Sometimes, why do people turn away from God?
Because they want something.
They're too poor.
What? Too poor, what else? Right, what's discussed in Vayelech?
Fear.
And fear...
Lack of Abba Israel.
Okay, in Vayelech, what is it? Because they will be influenced by the people around them. Right? That's Vayelech, right? You will go and you will worship Elohei Nechar Haaretz, the gods that the other people in the land are worshiping, right? This is like a central fear in Dvarim, that you will go into Israel, there will be other nations, you will become influenced by them.
Right.
Yes?
Yes.
So he says as follows. So the Netziv says to me, Shumayri Hani Kroi B'Nevua Dimei Shvara Shoftim Ha'azinu. Sorry. Vayelech, right? I mean, this pasuk is in Vayelech, right before Hazinu. Hazinu describes the rebellion against God because of wealth, right? Because of affluence. Okay. Vayelech predicts the avodah zarah that will come simply because people are influenced by the Elohei Nechar Haaretz. So he says the pasuk of writing the song appears in Vayelech, in which we haven't yet introduced the notion that the Jews rebel because of affluence, because of wealth. Okay? And therefore he argues that Ha'azinu refers to at what stage in history did the Jews start rebelling because of wealth?
No.
In the future. In the future, right? Past Moshe. Right? Because this is a prediction.
I mean, aren't there multiple points?
So good. When does that start happening? When do the Jews start rebelling because they're wealthy? And things are good? No. Yeshua, first of all, they don't rebel. Second of all, they're in the middle of war. Things are not good.
You said everything went
wrong. Thank you. In Malachim. Under the idolatrous, wealthy, successful kings. Achav, Menashe, people like that. Achav, really, right? Yeravam, yeah, sure. Right, those kings. In Shoftim, why do they rebel against God? This is not a guess. Shoftim says why they rebel against God in Shoftim. No. Because they failed to kick out the nations around them and were therefore influenced to worship what was around them. Not because of wealth, but because there were other nations around, they hadn't kicked them out, and they were influenced.
Why is it always that Jews get influenced
by
the other nations?
I don't know. I mean, presumably it's not always. Under Shlomo, it wasn't, right? People learned from us, right? Chizkiyahu, people learned from us. right? Bavel came to visit Chizkiyahu and say, "Whoa, what are these miracles that are happening to you?" So it's not true, right? People do get influenced the other way, but we're happy when that happens, not the other way. Oh, we do talk about it, Chizkiyahu. We talk about it with Shlomo, but it cultures influence each other in both ways. We just don't like this direction. We like the other direction. The other direction is great.
When someone does Kiddush Hashem, so people learn from us.
Correct. But I think just in Tanakh and these stories, right? So he says, so now they need to make this very complex argument, which is, in Vayelech, God is predicting that the Jews will go off the Derech and worship Avodah Zarah simply because there are other nations around. That happens in Shoftim. Shalagil Avodah Zarah Mishem Rov Sova Va'oneg, where they didn't worship idols because of they were rich and they had and the imkain lo nizkra galutam b'shirata azinu treisham avar vayishman yishun vayivat, and therefore there is a break between right, the pasuk that says right shira azot is in vayelech, which is in the middle of a discussion of rebuke for the Jews that will happen not due to wealth but due to cultural influence. Hazinu itself discusses the Avodah Zarah that will happen because of wealth. But the Pasuk that tells you to write the Shira is right before Hazinu, still in the middle of Vayelech. Okay? V'zeh ayah b'mei malchei Yisrael v'yudah rishayim d'chtev v'samuk v'achal v'yisav v'dashen v'alzeh ador k'tiv shama g'ulag v'var sham p'sukim l'amenei l'amenevav Ella al karchach perush zeh ha'ed hainu kol ha'torah. Why does this matter? Why does this matter for the Netziv? Because the Netziv thinks that if Vayelech, right, God tells Moshe to write the Shira in the middle of a prophecy that the Jews will rebel simply because of cultural influence, which means that what, according to the Netziv, does Shira not refer to? Max, what does it not refer to according to the Netziv? But what does the word Shira not refer to? No, it doesn't refer to Hazinu because there's a break, right? Because, again, the command to write the Shira appears in Psukim that say that the Shira is a solution to Avodah Zarah that is worshipped because of cultural influence. But the message of Hazinu is, don't worship Avodah Zarah because you become so full of yourselves because you're rich. Which means that according to the Netziv, the Shira being discussed in Vayelech can refer to Hazinu because the message of Hazinu is different than the context of the pasuk in which the command to write the Shira appears. I said this was complicated.
Okay.
Right? Right? Does that make any sense? Right?
Yeah.
If not, I think I'll try one more time. Right? The reason that Rashi, Ramban, all those people think that the word Shira Hazot referred to Hazinu is because the end of Vayelech says, after you die, Moshe, the Jews will rebel. The solution is the Shira. Mm-hmm. And then we launch into Hazinu. So Rashi says it's Hazinu. The Netziv said there's a problem. Because in Vayelech, God says the problem is the Jews will be influenced by those around them. Solution, Shira. So you'd expect that Hazinu would talk about giving people Musar for not worshipping Avodah Zarah simply to do what everyone else around them is doing. But the problem is Hazinu shifts to giving people Musar for not worshipping Avodah Zarah when they are so wealthy that they forget God. And therefore, the Netziv says, Hazinu doesn't solve the problem that Vayelech sets out. Right? Oh, sure, that's how everyone else reads it. But the Netziv is suggesting that what led Chazal to think that the Shira is broader than Hazinu is that since the prediction of Vayelech that the Shira is coming to solve is not exactly solved by the message of Hazinu, it must be that the Shira is something broader.
I get why you can't just say, like, oh, they're both trying to.
You could! I'm not. Okay. Nachum, yes. You could.
Yes, yes.
Right? I said none of these are glot. Right? But this is the Netziv's attempt to justify it. Right? Is to say the way Chazal knew that the word Shira didn't refer only to Hazinu is because Hazinu provides Musar only for a very particular kind of rebellion and specifically not the one that it's said to solve. Right? That the Shira is supposed to solve. Now, the answer would be these things overlap. Right? right? People rebel because of cultural influence and because of wealth and da-da-da-da-da, and don't be so, right, nitpicky, right, etc. But that's how the Netziv reads this. Now, the Netziv has a second point, which is that he also thinks that the word Shira means Torah, right? Meaning there's two prongs to Netziv. One is that he thinks that Hazinu doesn't solve the problem that it's that the Shira in Vayelech is set to solve. The second is that he thinks Shira refers to the Torah. Why does he think Shira refers to the Torah? I'm not going to read this inside with you. What does he say in the Kidmat HaEmek?
The chaps of the Torah.
Don't guess. Ugh. I didn't ask you generally.
It's
what?
It's read as a song.
We sing the Torah when we do the traps. So that's okay.
Don't guess. What does he say?
In Tess?
In Yud.
Yud.
Oh, I thought you were selling the tip.
As a
I am.
As a
that is the Netziv.
What is it? Right.
As a nature.
Okay, guys, skills for life. Skills for life, okay? What's the last line in the Netziv in Chet? Last line. Literally, last words. Last words in Chet. Yes. The explanation for what I just said is in my other book, Kidmat HaEmek. Guess what I gave you in Yud? You should have noticed that.
The Kidmat
HaEmek. That I said, this is not a guess, right? Right? The Netziv told you, look it up. So you know what I did? I made you look it up. Don't guess. It's not a bad answer, objectively speaking, that the reason the Torah has a Shira is because we read it in tune. It's a bad answer if I ask you, what does the Netziv say? He says what he means, and then he references it to you.
I thought that line right here is what he's saying, though.
Yeah, but he said, look at Kidmat HaEmek if you want to understand what I said. And so then I gave you the Kidmat HaEmek.
What's this Nikra Shira thing?
It's called a song. Right?
Oh, I thought it's Reddit. Okay.
No, it is called a song.
Right. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm over here.
Nacham. Okay, anyways. Fine. By the way, I will point out that it's, that Siv's read is actually supported by the Midrash Tanaim. I gave that to you in Tet, where the Midrash Tanaim does in fact claim that the Nevuot in Hazinu refer to the period of the Malachim. Right, that's Tet. Right? Shamanta bimei Ravam, Avita bimei Achav, Kasita bimei Yehu. Right, and it mentions that these all happened during the period of the king, so he is correct that the Chazal self-understood Hazinu to refer very specifically to the rebellions that happened during the period of the kings, which means that if you're looking for Musar about other periods of rebellion, you do have to look elsewhere. Right, so the Netziv is not crazy, right? He does have Chazal to support him. Okay. Now, if you haven't read the Kidmat HaEmek, it's fine. Just tell me that. That's fine.
I didn't expect everyone to get the Kidmat HaEmek.
I don't expect you to get through all the sources, but I do expect you not to make it up, okay?
I'm sorry, that's what I thought the Netziv was saying.
Well, he didn't. He told you what he said. What?
It seems that you only gave us Aleph and Bet.
No. This is Oz Gimel. This is all from Oz Gimel. Those are just bullet points, right?
You said you were banging your head over the Netziv, so...
I didn't say it was easy. That's why I said... I asked you, do you understand it? The answer can legitimately no. That's fine. Okay, good. So the Netziv gives you the following. I'll say it out. I'll skip through it a little bit. He said like this. He says, why is the Torah called a Shira? Because he said there's two elements to song. Aleph. The Bashir ain't inyan mevor yafeh kamo b'sefer v'sipur prazi. The first thing is that the difference between... By the way, what does Shira mean in Tanakh? Or in modern Hebrew, a poem, thank you. A poem, right? Meaning it can mean a song, but it fundamentally means non-prose writing, right? It means poetry, right? You can have poetry put to music, that's called a song. You can have it not, it's called, but shir includes both.
Shir Shirim.
Right, it's not necessarily song of songs, it could be poem of poems, right? Poem of poems or something, right? Meaning it's not prose, that's the point. So, the Netziv said, first point, what is the first difference between prose and poetry? Is that prose is clearer than poetry. Everyone agree with that? Prose is clearer than poetry. Right? Why?
Because
He said, why? Because what does poetry care about that prose doesn't care about as much? Yes, thank you. Style, aesthetic, beauty of the writing, and therefore, sometimes the way that you write is therefore more flowery, you worry about rhymes, you worry about meter, you worry about all those things, and if that means that clarity suffers, so be it. Right? So be it. Ever try reading sonnets, you know, like Shakespeare, right? What? You know, it's not the clearest writing that has ever happened. You know? So he says that is the nature of the Torah, because definitely the way Chazal understand the Torah is that the Torah is
right, a song,
is a poem, is a poet in the sense that what the style of writing is opaque, right? That we derive halachot from extra vavs and from gzeres shaves and hints and metaphors and right the same way in a song. In a poem, right? There's a lot of layers built in, and it's not, it doesn't just tell you everything straightforwardly. Mm-hmm. So the Torah is like that. That's point one.
Poetry.
The second point is, well, I mean, look, these are two functions of the same thing, right? One is that things aren't as clear, and the other is that things is that you try to make it beautiful and flowery, right? And that obviously is part of the unclarity, right? Those are the two elements of song, right? It's less clear, partially because of the fact you care about style, right? So he says that is how we understand the Torah, right? Is it has all these hints, and God cares about style, right? And then he says in the last paragraph, right? And he said this, it's this nature, right? The uniqueness of the Torah, the nature of its writing, that we call it Shira, right? There are things that are hidden, that it's written stylistically in a way that not everything is, right, straightforward, right? That it's beautiful aesthetically, right? Those elements of Shira is why the Torah is called Shira, right? So again, there are two prongs in Siv's argument, right? One is the fact that he thinks that the Shira mentioned Vayelech cannot refer to Hazinu because it doesn't cover the right time periods in terms of prophecy. And the second element is that he already thinks that the Torah is Shira. Right? Hence, it's the logical thing to plug in. The Aruch HaShulchan, as well, says the reason the Torah is called Shir, he says, Tiferet Shir hi kisha kolot mishunim zemi zevu, zeu ikar hanimud. Right? He has a nice drash, which is that we all know that we like machloket in Torah, and he says that's why the Torah is called a song, because what makes a symphony beautiful is different voices. Right? Meaning is that you don't have the same instrument playing over and over, right? Because you have different instruments that provide different elements, and that's what creates the beauty. That's why Torah is a song. It's a symphony. Okay?
Okay.
Let me summarize where we are so far, and then I'm going to need Max. Okay?
Need me?
Yes, I'm going to need you.
Okay.
I'm going to need you. Because we're going to have to replay our conversation from Seder. Okay? Good. So, the Gemara derives from the Pasuk of Vayikra Kitvu Lachem et Hashirah Hazot that you have to write the whole Torah. We said, how do you get from a pasuk that talks about Hazinu to the whole Torah? Possibility one is the Rambam. It means Hazinu, but you just have to write the whole Torah. Right? Because you're never allowed to write a single parasha. Problem, if there was a mitzvah to write the parasha, you'd be allowed to do it. Fine. So, next, other possibilities that we saw. One is the logical argument, which is Hazinu is a warning about the Torah. If you have to write the warning to keep the content, obviously you have to write the content. That one I actually think is pretty good. I think that's probably the best of the lot. Prong two to that argument is that the Shira often refers to Torah, both because sometimes in the Torah is referred to as Shir. Second of all, because logically to Shir, because we celebrate Machloket, which creates a symphony, which is the Aruch HaShulchan. It's written in hidden ways. It cares about style, which is the Netziv. The Torah Tamima sort of very, very complicated reading of the Pasuk, which is write Hazinu with which you finish the whole Torah and then give that, then teach the Torah to the Jewish people, right? That's basically all the possibilities we have on how we got from the Pasuk to the Halacha. Now, Max, your heretical question from this morning, which is what? I say that facetiously, obviously.
What?
I say that facetiously. But your...
My question was, I don't know if it's
goes with what you were just saying. I don't know if you heard it a different way. Narrative was the whole thing is the obligation to write Torah is if the real obligation is to write Hazinu, and then you can get the Torah. You don't have to write the whole Torah. The obligation is to write Hazinu.
Good. So let me put it right even more starkly, right? As I put it at the top of the next page, which is maybe this is all wrong. Right? It's just wrong. Meaning, we're bending over backwards to defend this Russia, and maybe it's just wrong. And now you'll tell me, okay, now I'm a heretic, right? I told you this one would be less controversial, but last week I was telling you, right, about Psukim not written by Moshe, now I'm telling you that halacha's wrong. Right? What do I mean? Yeah. What do I mean when I say it's wrong? I'm not actually saying anything heretical. Right? It's the easiest move in Gemara always, which is to say, no, not a typo. That would be heretical already. Come on, that's not what I'm going to say. This is from Yerucham Vishal Perla. Maybe, it's Dirabbanan, and the Pasuk is an Asmachta, and Chazal don't really think that the Pasuk means write the whole Torah. It means write Hazinu, and the Chiyuv to write the whole Torah is only Dirabbanan. And therefore, it's not a problem. Because the assumption until now is that the biblical mitzvah is to write the whole Torah. But if you just say it's rabbinic, what is an asmachta, guys? What's an asmachta? Not an etnachta, an asmachta.
Asmachta de gula.
Right? The asmachta is, there's a machlokes, but let's just take some of the answers. Right? The way most, the Rambam, Rashi, others, asmachta is where the Torah doesn't mean something. Chazal make a derabbanan law, but they find a pasuk to hang it, the law on, not because they think that the Torah actually means this, but because it helps you remember it, because it's nice, it's just a nice way to do it, right? But that's not really what the pasuk means. It's derabbanan, and the pasuk is just a hint, right? But really, 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 it's only derabbanan, and the pasuk isn't the real source. The real source is derabbanan. In which case, do you have to figure out how the pasuk gets to the exact halachic conclusion?
Nope.
No, because it's derabbanan. Right? This is slightly less heretical than saying this is just wrong. It's saying these problems are insurmountable. Right? Meaning, justifying how Shira means the whole Torah is actually not possible or too unlikely. So maybe Shira only means
Hazinu.
And the writing the rest of the Torah. When the Gemara and Sanhedrin tells you to write the whole Torah, which it does, right? Seems to, anyways. That is at best Dirabbanan. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, who said this? No tricks. Who said this?
The Beer All Safer on
the Torah. What? Well, not the Rasag, actually. So, okay, little history for you. The Sefer HaMitzvos of Rasagigon, does it exist?
No.
No, thank you. No. The Rambam has Sefer HaMitzvos. So do a lot of people. Does Rasagigon have a Sefer HaMitzvos? No, he doesn't. Then why does it say that there is on this page? Because it was made up. Well, what does it mean? It's made up, right? Rav Sajig. Okay, this is a feat.
This already sounds interesting.
Okay, if you look in a library, you will see a Sefer HaMitzvos of Rav Sajigon. It is 3 fat volumes, huge, and it'll say Sefer HaMitzvos of Rav Sajigon in Perush or Beir Rabbi Rucham Fishel Perla. Okay, now. Rav Sajigon wrote a poem, which talked about the mitzvot, which is all of something like 400 words long, right? 400 words long is
pretty short.
What?
An epic. We're going in the context of poetry, things being like
400 words. 400 words.
Yeah.
What?
In poetry and epics are one of these things that are 400 words long. Ginormous things.
400 words. Words.
Yeah.
That's not. How is that long?
Words.
400 words. Not an epic. Not 400 pages. 400 words.
Okay.
Like one paragraph.
400.
400 words.
That's a long. Yes.
Words.
Okay.
That's. How many words are on this page with the schedule? Right. 400 words. Words. Okay. Ah, then how in God's name does this poem, which is 400 words long, talking about the mitzvot, how does that become a 3,000-page book?
They're doing it smart fun. In big font, they did it in big font.
You know how big that font would have to be? It's more than a word a page. How did it become that big? The answer was Reb Yerucham Fischel Perla. Is Reb Yerucham Fischel Perla decided that this poem that Reb Sajagon wrote was not just a poem, it was a poem in which Reb Sajagon encapsulated his count of the 613 mitzvos. And then Reb Yerucham Fischel Perla sets out to attempt to reconstruct the logic that went into every word in that poem. And he wrote a book trying to build what would Reb Sajagon believe the 613 mitzvot are based on the poem that he wrote about the mitzvot. I see Gavi's face. By the way, the most incredible part about this is that, again, this is like 3,000 page Sefer. Not only is it incredible that he managed to somehow recreate a book, which I can't say, it's a very nice book, but I can't say it's a very compelling reader of Reb Sajagon under most circumstances. That's only half of what's shocking about this book. The other half, as Reb Schechter likes to point out, is that Reb Yerucham Fischel Perla was not a professional rabbi. He was a businessman. And he did this in his free time. Right? That's the other mind-boggling thing about Reb Yerucham Fischel Perla. Gavi's like, I don't know which of those bothers me more. Right? Every time I think about it, I'm like, your book is insane and I feel inferior. That is my reaction every time I think about Reb Yerucham Fischel Perla. Pieces of it. I could not get through that entire book. Do you know how long that thing is? And how complicated that thing is? I go through it very slowly. Piece by piece by piece by piece. It is massive. It is incredibly huge. Therefore, the style in that book is for him to take two, three words in Reb Sajagon's poem and build entire 20, 30 page articles about them, trying to reconstruct, based on his knowledge of all of Shas and all Rishonim and Achronim, what Reb Sajagon might have meant. Now, Reb Yerucham Fischel Perla notes that at the end of his poem, Reb Sajagon talks about writing the Torah on the tablets, on the stones. But what does he never include in his poem? A mitzvah to write a personal Sefer Torah. So Reb Yerucham Fischel Perla speculates in this you'd bet, that maybe, Amnam bi'ikara davar lifi nidati. I think really, really the truth is that everything we've done for the last 2 days, you should be so unconvinced by everything I've said for the last hour and a half.
Why?
This is his argument. Because none of these drashot sound compelling, and therefore I think they're not compelling. There is no such mitzvah. And then you'll say, I, the Rambam. What does he say?
He doesn't agree.
Yes, he says, well, all the Achronim already said that the Rambam is wrong. Right? Now they try to provide their other drashot.
Wait, how does it explain the other Achronim that say that it does?
Well, he buys their questions and not their answers.
I like this guy.
He says, I buy their questions. Right? Which is, this drasha is very tenuous, but I don't like any of their answers. And therefore he says, V'nireh dirabanan ba'almahu. Answer, it's only dirabanan. Done. Done. It's Rabbanan. Because of all the reasons we said.
Is there a way to respond to that?
So what's the conclusion?
Wait 1 second. Thank you. 1 second. And then he says, now, he brings another proof to this, which is, in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, what mitzvah is the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah, an individual writing a Sefer Torah, compared to?
Is it forgotten from Har Sinai?
No, what? That's in Menachot. It's compared to getting from Har Sinai. What mitzvah?
A king.
Thank you. The king's writing the Sefer Torah. Now, he notes that in the Gaonim, there's a machoke. What does the king have to write? So if you read our Gemara, and you assume that you have to write a Sefer Torah and the king has to write a Sefer Torah, then what is the king writing? The whole Sefer Torah.
Right.
But what would happen if you found out that the Gaonim, remember, he's trying to understand the Gaonim, the Gaonim think that the king doesn't have to write the whole Sefer Torah.
I'm sorry.
Oh, Nachum's like, this bothers me already. Good, good. Tell me, what does the king have to write?
A Sefer Torah.
Oh, does he? Thank you, Mishneh Torah Hazot. He has to write Mishneh Torah. What is Mishneh Torah? So Mishneh Torah is, well, not Torah. Right, it's not the whole Torah. It's in Chazal, it's Dvarim. But the Gaonim said, maybe this means, and this is what he says in his third paragraph here. He says, well, Rav Haigon says that it was 613 letters. That's it. It was a little symbolic thing that had one letter per mitzvah. It wasn't the whole Torah. It was a little nothing. Shein Taryagot Yod Kineged Taryag Mitzvot. The Aruch brings this in the name of Hananel, in the name of Nachshon Gaon as well. The Rush in his Perush on the Torah, in the Hadar Zakenim, in the Balei HaTosfot al Torah, says, what Torah did he write? The Aseret Hadibrot. Mishneh Torah means the Aseret Hadibrot, which has 613 letters, which is parallel to the Torah. A third Perush is, and he notes that the Gaonim are referring to this idea that the Aseret HaDibrot are a shorthand for all 613 mitzvot. And if you ever want to really torment yourself, if you look in the Kitvei Ramban, there is a Sefer HaMitzvot there of the Ramban. It is an attempt to show how all 613 mitzvot are really just derivatives of the Aseret HaDibrot. And it goes through all 613 and plugs them all into the Aseret HaDibrot. Good luck. Some of them are more obvious than others, like damages are under stealing. Okay, right? Good luck trying to plug in all 613. It's probably not actually written by the Ramban. It's probably written by, I think, Rav Azriel of Gerona, but that's okay. A third position in the Gaonim is that it is a kitsur of the mitzvot. It's a summary of the mitzvot. Now, what does this prove?
That you don't have to write the entire
Torah. Well, yes. Meaning, according to this, even within the Gemara is comparing what the king has to write to what an individual has to write. And what does the king have to write?
The Ten Commandments.
A few psukim, a few words, which would indicate that if the king has to write something, which is only a few psukim or a few words, then what might the individual have to write?
Only a few words.
Only a few psukim, maybe hazinu. Right? Or something like that. What? Well, good. That's what he's arguing. Maybe that's what the Gaonim thought. Right? And remember, he's trying to construct, why would Rav Saji Gaon, according to him, think that there's no biblical mitzvah to write the whole Torah? Because Rav Saji Gaon also thinks, right, the Gaonim also think that the Sefer Torah of the king is not the whole Torah. And if the Gemara compares the Sefer Torah of the king to the Sefer Torah of the individual, and the Sefer Torah of the king doesn't mean the whole Torah, then the Shira of the individual Jew is not the whole Torah. And therefore, he argues that perhaps, again, he goes back and forth on whether he accepts this maskana, and argues that maybe there's not a libid de hilchaza, but he at least suggests the possibility that in fact none of these drushes are compelling. The simple read of the Shira is that this refers to a specific unit within the Torah, presumably the Shira. And just like the Gaonim think that the Sefer Torah written by the king, the Mishneh Torah, rather, of the king, does not include the entire Torah. By the way, why do they think that? Why do the Gaonim think that the king doesn't have a whole Torah with him? Yeah, because he has to carry it back and forth all the time, and that's a bit schleppy. Right?
Maybe a small Sefer Torah. Like,
that's how the Rambam would explain it. It's a small Sefer Torah. But the Gaonim, like, right? One solution is a small Sefer Torah. The other solution is that it's a few words or a few psukim, which is easy to fold up into your pocket or whatever. So the last possibility, which we're not going to spend more time on, because lahalacha, the majority view in Rishonim, is that there is a biblical mitzvah to write the Torah, and we're going to base ourselves on that assumption from now on, right? But I do want to point out that there is a possibility that all of the drashot that we've done the last 2 days, if you didn't find them compelling, maybe the answer is they are not, right? They are not, and this is only rabbinic, but biblically there is no such mitzvah, and maybe Shira really just refers to Hazinu, and that's the end of the story. Nachum's like, I like that. Okay, good. Guys, we have a few more minutes left, so I'm going to now move on from the drashot. Okay? And now, from now on, we are going... I told you, this is the hardest part of the sugya. Now we're going to move to why everyone likes the sugya, because it's nice and neat. Okay? In 10 minutes, let's get the ball rolling. Okay. Good. Guys, tell me, the nature of the mitzvah to write the Torah. So, what do you think? Is the mitzvah to write the Sefer Torah or not? What line in the Gemara will it hang on? Chotev, mitzvah menashuk. Very good. Right? Whether or not there's actually a mitzvah to write the Torah hangs on when the Gemara says that if you buy the Sefer Torah, it's as if you grab the mitzvah and a shuk. What does that mean? What are the two possibilities? Again, we talked about this yesterday.
Rashi said,
well, first, two possibilities. Before you give me a name, what are the two possibilities? How do you read that line?
That you kind of like take mitzvahs you're not supposed to.
Which means? And therefore?
It's better to write it.
Better, but not, right? One way of chotev mitzvah and a shuk is your yotzei. Right, and what it means, you grab the mitzvah, is you actually fulfilled it, but in a non-ideal way. So you grabbed it, but you should have written it. Right, according to that, what would the nature of the mitzvah be? Is it to write a Torah?
No.
It's to own a Torah. Right. Remember, I told you. I'm just doing this 10 minutes now to show you why everyone likes. Like I said, the classic shiur on writing a Torah starts right here because it's so neat and so easy, right? And they ignore how we got to the psukim right here, right now. Who says what Daniel just said, which is that the mitzvah isn't really to write? We say write because that's normally the way you get something. But if you buy it, that's not ideal, but it counts because really, really, really the mitzvah is about owning it. Who says that? Rashi. Why does Rashi say that? Someone read me Rashi. And now you wanted to be in our Gemara? We're in our Gemara. What does Rashi say? Esh. What does Rashi say? Good. Right, Rashi says, Chotev mitzvah menashuk means you grab the mitzvah, which means you fulfill the mitzvah. What's the problem? It's not ideal. Why is it not ideal?
It's better to write it.
Because it's better to write it, just like we have a rule in Kiddushin Daf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, which is mitzvah bo yoter mi bishlucho. It's better to do a mitzvah yourself. Wow, they're even louder than we are. That's impressive. Right? Okay. Right, the Gemara in Kiddushin says it's better to do a mitzvah yourself than through a shliach, through a messenger, because it's you're more invested in the mitzvah. Correct, but it's still better, right? Emotionally, existentially, religiously, whatever. It's better for you to do a mitzvah yourself rather than appoint an agent. Right? So you assume that this Gemara is essentially a function of that, which is you are yotzei. It's just not the best mitzvah. But according to that, the nature of the mitzvah is probably not to write, it's really to own. So why does the Torah say write? Because it's better to write, or the normal way to own is to write, right? It's not like Sifrei Torah is so common, it takes a long time to write. So normally, the best way to do it is to write it. Good. Who disagrees? Who seems to say that the mitzvah, that chotev mitzvah nashuk doesn't mean you fulfill the mitzvah but not ideal, but you actually didn't fulfill the mitzvah? The Rambam. The Rambam seems to hold that the mitzvah is in fact to write. How do I know? Someone read me the Rambam.
Sefer mitzvahs or Mishnah Torah?
What? Perek Gimel. Wait. Which one did I give? Either one. But either one. I gave you several Rambams. We won't get through all of them today, but read me any of them and be medayik, right? Right? Prove it to me.
That there's a commitment for every male, mimenu sefer Torah la'atzmo, to have a sefer Torah for himself. But if he writes it himself,
but the Rambam is not clear. But I want to be clear, right? I want to show why some people read the Rambam this way. Because what does the Rambam then say? He says,
that if he writes it, it's a. The psukim kind of seem like it's the name is of Kabbalah from Har Sinai. Bim ef shar lo the kasrav biyado. But I guess if he's not able to write it himself, chayv hu liknoso, he's chayv to buy it. O yivakesh she kasrav bishvila, or he should appoint someone to write it for him.
Okay, good. So the second half of that, which is if you can't write it, appoint someone to write it on your behalf. So what does that sound like?
You can hire shlutim.
The mitzvah is
to own it.
No, to write it, because he emphasizes getting a shliach to write it on your behalf, not to get the Torah.
What's the
question is, what do you do with that first word of liknoto? Okay. So if you look at the Rambam, now let's look for a second in Mishneh Torah. He says, "Mitzvah Aseh Kol Ish V'Ish Mishrael Lichtov Sefer Torah Latzmo." A person must write the Torah for himself. Shneamar V'Atak Kitvu L'Chem Hashirazo. Klomar Kitvu Ata Torah. Write the Torah Sheish V'Hashirazo. L'Fish Ein Golim Ata Torah Parshiyot Parshiyot. V'Af Al Pish Enicholol Adam Avotav Sefer Torah Mitzvah Lichtov Mishalo. Even if you inherited it, you have to write it yourself. V'Im Katvo B'Yadok Kilu Kiblo Misina V'Nedi Lichtov Achirim Kotvin Lo. And if you don't know how to write, someone else writes on your behalf. What does the Rambam not say in Mishneh Torah? Buy it. He doesn't say you can buy it. He can says
someone else could.
You can have someone else write it on your behalf.
It could be when you buy it, it's as if he wrote it.
Hold your thoughts for 1 second. One second. Now, therefore, many Achronim argue that the Rambam, based on how he writes in Mishneh Torah, thinks that the mitzvah is to write it. And that's why in Mishneh Torah, does he say you can buy it? No, he says you can appoint someone else to write on your behalf. But that's a shliach for the Maase Mitzvah, which is Ksiva.
So technically, let's say there's about to finish one, say, okay, can you write me Mishneh Torah as your shliach? And he finishes the last letter.
Good. What's the answer to that question?
Yeah, it says even Osaf.
Yes, how do I know?
It says Osaf.
Thank you, that was our Gemara in Menachot. V'kol ha-megiya Osachas kilu katvo. Right, if you fix one letter, perfect. That's why people...
But I'm not saying that you fix.
Right. Correct. Or you tell him.
You be my shaliach, and you write the last letter.
Yep.
So if I wrote a Sefer Torah...
What? Hold the thoughts. Now, there is a third possibility, right? I said this lamdus is very neat. Right? Rashi clearly holds the mitzvah is to own. Hence, if you buy it, you're yotze. The Rambam in Mishneh Torah, again, we'll flesh this out more tomorrow. But the Rambam in Mishneh Torah seems to say that the mitzvah is
to write it.
And therefore, you can either write it or appoint someone to write it. The problem is, in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, he's very clear that not only can you appoint someone to write it, what can you do?
Buy it.
But what? And you're yotze, but what are you not yotze with? If you
inherit
it. So now give me a third position that would explain why you can be yotze if you buy it, but not if you inherit it.
You spend something of your own to get it.
Good. Who wants to read me the footnote? I noticed this in your footnote. What does he say? Footnote Samach Dalet here. From the Minchas Chinuch. Minchas Chinuch says what Daniel said, which is there's really three possibilities. One is that the mitzvah is to write. One is that the mitzvah is to own. And what's the third possibility? To square the Rambam's claim that you are not yotze if you inherit, but you are yotze if you buy. Or it's not really about spending money, but it's the fee share. Possibility three is you have to
do something
to get the Torah in your possession, which means buying counts because have to do it. Inheriting doesn't work because
you can't make a Canadian
then die.
No, because it was passive; it just happened by itself. So there are three models, and we're going to flesh these out.
Yeah, but you had to be born.
By the way, guys, you understand now what I said. Once we finish the drush out. Now it's easy. This is a very easy subject. It is very straightforward. We're going to be going... Guys, I want you... Okay, we'll stop here, but we're going to go through the Rishonim, we're going to go through the Achronim, we're going to try to get to Halacha L'Maisa, but the rest of the subject really is this easy, right? It's the Rishonim are very straightforward. It's, is it to write? Is it to do an action? Is it to own? And then the second question will be, what is the nature of the mitzvah? Is it to write a Sefer Torah per se, or... Write the Sefer Torah or own a Sefer Torah to accomplish a certain goal, and the question we're going to have to deal with is who's Chayev and why does no has how many people here have actually written the Sefer Torah?
Well, it depends.
Oh, good. Besides
you, mean
what?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I mean, I've done that too. But why does that work? We'll have to figure that out. Why do people are they not mocking this?
If you have to own it, then it's
good. And we're going to see that in the rush. By the way, just so you guys know, where is the rush? Because I'm not going to be here from... Oh, tomorrow I'm not here from 9 to 11. I'm at Amudim. We will have shir as soon as I get back. So just do Achana. I'm giving a different shir. Where is the rush, by the way? I gave you the rush, but where is it? It's in the back, people. You can find it in the back. If you have trouble, ask Ray Wasserman, okay? Just go ahead.